New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
You're live. What's up, everybody? Welcome to West by Pod, podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 Conference, and Patrick Mahomes slander. I'm Joel Bracken at WVU Stats Guy, joined as always by Jordan Pinto at Game Day Shorts. Jordan, we are to the last team that West Virginia will face in the regular season before a conference championship and a deep playoff run. We're talking Texas Tech today. How are you feeling?
Well, it's another Wednesday night, raw dogging Trust loggers and talking about the OGMB. So, I've been worse. I've been worse for sure. Yeah. How you doing?
Dude, I'm doing great. We're recording on a Wednesday. We're like, 11 days out from Penn State. We're turning in our homework in right before the deadline, finishing our summer series before we get into our Penn State previews. We've been crushing some pods the last couple nights,
dude,
but
always did do my best work. Under the gun a little bit, so you know, nothing new there.
Sometimes you just need that. Like, I had a good friend in college that he always would talk about that, like, if the pressure wasn't there, he didn't feel like he worked efficiently. So you got to, like, procrastinate until you're like, oh shit, I got to get this done, and then you do your best work, you do it fast. If you're in college listening to this, I don't know if that's really good advice. It's just advice I've heard.
I'm not sure that it's bad advice, really, either. It's just, you know, just an anecdote, you know? That's all. Thank you for what it is.
True. All right, so let's just get straight into it. We're talking Texas Tech today. This is the last team West Virginia will play. This is the 11th entry into our deep dive series. We didn't do the FCS school we were playing this year, but going to get into Texas Tech, starting with last year. They went 7-6. 6-6 in a bowl win. Kind of a rough start of the season, going up to Wyoming and losing that one. Not your favorite way to get the second season for Joey McGuire going. I know there was some optimism for the team. All in all, I think the season ended fine for them. I don't think you can be too upset with the tools they had. And I think one of the big things was Tyler Shuck getting hurt very early in the season. He got hurt against us. They didn't even really get into conference play with the quarterback they thought they were going to carry. The end with a winning record. My vibes around the program were just, it's probably fine. Joey McGuire went 8-5 in his first season and then 7-6 last year. Maybe your preseason expectations were a little down from that, but Like I said, I think the way they finished the season, like they were, you know, they were fine. So this season coming in, out of 16 teams in the Big 12 conference, they are picked ninth. So right there in the middle of the pack. So we're picked seventh. So they're, you know, right there around the middle with us. And, you know, I think that seems like the right thing. This seems like last year it was sort of that middle of the conference team, likely to be similar this season. Returning production, they're 69th, so almost like right in the middle. That's nice. And 67th in beta rank offense last year, 24th in beta rank defense. So definitely relied on the defense a little bit more. Not something you always say about Texas Tech, but it was true last year. What were your big thoughts on Texas Tech last year?
Yeah, I think you just said a lot of words that kind of added up to just bang average team last year. You know, 7-6 overall, 5-4 in the conference, 27-26 scoring differential, 3-3 in one score games. You know, I think they just, just a bang average college football team. You know, aside from Wyoming, probably won most of the games they should have, lost most of the games they should have. I had a note here, like, did they underperform last year, or were they a little overvalued coming into the year? You know, I think they were kind of getting some dark horse buzz coming into last season. The ball knowers that we are, we kind of sniffed that out. And, you know, there were some defensive metrics, I think, coming into the deep dive last year that indicated to us that maybe they pulled some of the things that they were doing in 2022 out of their ass a little bit, but I think you hit it right on the head. You know, I think they are appropriately valued this year. I would say they may be the first team kind of on that outside looking in of teams who I have, you know, I think last pod I said 7-8 teams have a realistic shot at getting to the conference championship if things fall right. I think Texas Tech is probably the first team on the outside of that group. Yeah. I don't know. I don't feel like there can be a ton of optimism. Going into this season, they do have some nice pieces, but you know, I think it's like a weird mix of dudes who probably aren't quite ready yet, and then kind of dudes who have been there who aren't really that high of, you know, high performing of players. Where it's like the timelines didn't sync up quite right for this to be a good season, but we'll get into all that.
Yeah, I have a note in here about them, just like how I was feeling about the team. It just feels like a team that it's not like, oh, you got a ton of seniors and you got a ton of guys lined up, and like, I think they're going to be fine. I don't think like this is the magical year for Texas Tech. That's not to say they're not going to beat up on, I think, a lot of the teams in the lower half of the conference. Yeah. So coaches real quick, Joey McGuire, third season. I mentioned, 8-5 first year, 7-6. I think they really like him. So, he'll be returning. The offensive coordinator is Zach Kittley. And I will read you the quote straight from his page. Well, they have about a short novel on Patrick Mahomes because he went there while Kittley was on staff. Patrick Mahomes, who was 0-2 against West Virginia, 13-19 in college.
Say that again.
0-2 against West Virginia. He's won a Super Bowl and couldn't beat the old Mountaineers. I mean, really makes you think.
Says a lot about the program.
Exactly. Zach Kittley, your OC, this is straight from his bio, architect behind one of the nation's top offenses at both Houston Baptist and Western Kentucky, as well as during his time at Texas Tech. So there you go. He might be the best offensive coordinator in the country, according to his bio. His third year there. And like I said, there's a short novel about Mahomes because they work together. Your DC, Tim DeReuter, also it's directly from his page, one of the top defensive minds in all of college football. So there you have it. Third season is the DC at Texas Tech. You just got these two studded dudes here. I don't know. You got your continuity. You got your guys back. I always just make the jokes about the bios because they're very fluffed up on the coordinators' pages. I don't know. I don't have strong feelings about the coaching staff, to be honest here. They're just sort of same guys they've had. And a lot of these guys have worked at Texas Tech on and off a lot of their career. I think they have a lot of combined seasons together.
Yeah, hey, the Tim DeReuter note, you can't really shoot too many holes in that. The guy got Texas Tech to the top half of Power 5 defensively. So arguably one of the top defensive minds in the country. But no, I mean, my note, a lot of continuity. Obviously, everybody's back. I think it might be the first team that we've looked at where that's the case, that that hasn't had at least one new coordinator on one side of the ball, or, you know, a full new staff or whatever. But yeah, no, I dig it. I don't have any problems with the coaching staff.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk players then. Kicking it off with the quarterbacks. We mentioned Tyler Shuck was the starter last year. He was kind of your guy, and he got hurt in the game in Morgantown pretty early. Baron Morton came in. And he played the rest of the season. He had a bad time in Morgantown that day. It was a showdown of two backup quarterbacks that West Virginia ended up getting the better of them. But yeah, I think Baron Morton was fine to a little worse than fine last year. I think there were some bright spots. Like, he had some okay games overall, but he had some rough ones. His season average comes out to 65, which is right there in that, you know, replacement level grade. Not really a runner, and just, you know, if you believe in the, like, the offense goes as the quarterback goes, I mean, honestly, I think he puts a little bit of a ceiling on what this offense can do. Just wasn't overly impressive last year. What are your thoughts on Morton?
Yeah, that was my note, is like, what exactly does this guy do well? You know, he came in with a ton of hype. You know, he was forced, I want to say he was one of the highest rated, if not the highest rated quarterback recruit that they had ever had in Lubbock. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned the 65 offensive grade, 61.6 passing grade. And so if you take out of 28 Big 12 quarterbacks who had at least 100 dropbacks last year, and that's including the extended Big 12, so like the Pac-4 that are coming in, plus KJ Jefferson, plus Brennan Sorsby, those numbers rank 24th out of 28 and 23rd out of 28, respectively, which is not great. Only completed 61% of his passes on 8.3 average depth of target. It's not great. 3.8 big-time throws versus 4.8% turnover-worthy plays. Not great. Running contribution, not great. Yeah, just I, you know, I think he does a lot of things okay, but it's just not clear to me, like, what this guy is, like, good at, or, you know. Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know. A lot of it's going to hinge on him this year taking that step, right? Like, I'm sure there are still some Baron Morton truthers out there, you know, who think he has it in him, and maybe he does. But to this point, we haven't seen it. And if he doesn't show it this year, I'm sure they're going to be, you know, looking at looking at the depth chart, looking at the transfer portal, and trying to get somebody else in here who can elevate them a little bit more than he has to this point. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think there were a few bright spots sprinkled in, but like TCU last year, you know, he had 283 yards, 78 game grade. UCF was fine, but it was almost like every other thing. You know, West Virginia game was really bad. I mean, he was kind of thrown in probably without the prep. I mean, he went 13 for 37 in that game, 36 yeah. Overall grade, not good. But he has several grades down in the 50s. So, yeah, he's got to take a big step. He had a 10 to 14 big time throw to turnover worthy play ratio. And PFF gave Texas Tech the lowest grade in passing in the conference last year. So, I mean, it is what it is.
When that's what you're trying to do, that's not a great thing, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think that's the way they envisioned the season. Tyler Shuck is not back. He actually transferred, and I'm forgetting who to.
I think
Power Louisville. School. Yeah, that Louisville, sounds right.
Yeah.
So yeah, your guy is Morton. I do think something that alleviates a little bit is the running back room. Taj Brooks returning. He is your only All Big 12. Well, no, he's your one of your two All Big 12 guys on the roster. And yeah, I just first word I've written down is just workhorse. Like, yeah, they give him the ball a lot, and he does really well. Yeah, you want to take the lead on Brooks?
Yeah, I mean, he's just been, I'd say, at least good for his entire career, and was great last year. Really good production his last 2 years as a starter. I think last year, you mentioned it, yeah, workhorse, 270 carries, almost 1,500 yards, 9 touchdowns, 91 forced missed tackles, which led the Big 12 by a considerable margin. So he's a hard guy to bring down. I think he's like 5'10", 230. He's just a little bowling ball of a dude. Yeah, really good player. Can catch the ball out of the backfield. Had a ton of volume last year. Wasn't overly productive with it, but it's something that he can do. And yeah, no, I think he's just a really good player. I've admired him for many years. It feels like he's been around forever because, I mean, dude was playing and contributing as a freshman. So, yeah, really good career. You know, I'm sure he's looking to put a cap on it this year. And he's going to have to, because I mean, you're looking down the depth chart. It gets thin pretty quickly. Cameron Valdez is the backup. He was good last year, but then after that, the only guy listed is Cameron Dickey, who's a true freshman who was actually recruited as a safety last year. So, you know, hopefully Taj can hold up, because if he catches the injury bug, if he misses any kind of extended time, you know, I think it gets really thin really quick for them in the backfield.
Yeah. I mean, Valdez, you mentioned he has good grades, but they only gave him the ball 40 times all year. I mean, Taj Brooks, especially as the season wore on, I think the last 10 games, he had at least 18 carries every game. So he has a potential 4,000-yard rushing career if he's anywhere close to that. Yeah.
Pretty good. So, yeah, it's not a committee down there. If they're going to run it, they give him the ball. So
yeah, primary back. And, yeah, I don't know. I'm looking across the offense, and I think there's a lot of responsibility on Taj Brooks to carry this thing, because, not even having the committee set up in the running back room, like Taj Brooks goes down and you start sort of looking around, because as we move to the receiver room, they have, if you just kind of look at the distribution of where the ball went last year and the grades, they didn't have a single guy go over 500 yards receiving last year. The thing was just kind of spread out all over the place. They had 6 receivers with over 35 targets. None of them graded above a 70 in PFF. So just a bunch of dudes, that nobody like stood out, you know, and really like make you like have to respect a singular guy. Coy Eakin was your top target guy coming back. You lose the top 3 targets guy, top 3 target guys, so Jaron Bradley, Miles Price, Xavier White, believe they're all out this year. So I don't know, you get some transfers in, you get Josh Kelly from Washington State, might be a factor. I think they targeted him over 90 times last year. He's a 6-year guy. That could be a nice addition. You also get Caleb Douglas in from Florida. Not much of a factor at Florida. And then the other guy, Dre McCray, he's all Big 12, but as a returner, not as a receiver. He's another returning guy. So I don't know. What do you think about the pass catchers?
Yeah, you know, I think you pretty much clocked it with everybody in there. The only other guys that I would highlight, Mason Tharp, the tight end. They didn't target him a ton, but when they did, he was pretty effective. I think he had pretty good grades. I think only 19 targets, but he caught 15 of them and caught 3 touchdowns. And then the other guy we have to mention is Micah Hudson. 5-star receiver coming in this year as a true freshman. I think he's listed as 3rd on the depth chart right now, but I would be shocked if he is not heavily impacting this offense, especially by November. If you haven't watched his highlights and you're curious about what a 5-star receiver looks like, go watch his highlights, and that's what it fucking looks like. This guy, he's like 6'2", 200 pounds, fast as a fucking gazelle running around out there. I think, you know, you said it. There's a ton of options who had volume and had reasonable, you know, kind of middling production last year. But the ceiling, I think, is going to hinge on Hudson. You know, if he breaks out and is like a capital D dude as a true freshman, then this room makes a lot more sense. If he's just kind of a part-time, you know, luxury piece this year, then, you know, I don't really see that high of a ceiling in this room. There's a lot of dudes who graded between like 60 and 65, which is, you know, like a pretty average grade, right? Like not quite like you're trying to find somebody else, but also, you know, not really turning heads. So, I think that my note on the receiving room, plenty of options, but you know, it's all going to come down to whether or not Hudson's ready to shoulder like an alpha dog burden as a freshman.
Yeah, which, you know, Texas Tech is one of those schools that does sort of, I think of them kind of having an identity of having these great receivers coming through. I mean,
yeah,
Crabtree, Wes Welker, Jakeem Grant, actually their all-time leading receiver. I'm peeking at it right now, but Danny Amendola, like they've put some guys into the league. So this guy could be a potential. So I don't know. I'm just looking at the quarterback in the receiving room. it's not looking fantastic to me. It's not a lot of proven production. That's not to say we aren't going to see some standouts, but yeah, I don't know. Not inspiring a ton of confidence. I'm looking at this offense and saying, man, Taj Brooks better go crazy like every game if they want to have a chance to win. Looking at the offensive line, yeah. Last year they were solid. They were fifth in pass block, fourth in run block in the conference. But they're only going to be returning one starter, and that's Caleb Rogers. He had a 71 grade last year. And I don't know, kind of an interesting situation. You have two guys who were on the roster last year. They didn't play a ton. And then you have two transfers who are your other two projected starters. One from Middle Tennessee State, not good, according to BFF. His two full seasons there, a 40 and a 53 grade. And then the other guy is from Toledo, and he's a get better every year kind of guy, grade of 71. Do you think the line is going to be as good as they were last year? Because they weren't bad. I mean, they were better half of the league.
No, I don't think there's a chance. You know, when you said Taj needs to go nuts every game, like my thought was, yeah, this is easier said than done. Because, yeah, I mean, you bring back one of your top, you're not even losing all five stars, you know, the four starters, you're losing your top rotation guy as well. Nice, you know, Rogers, guard, dude in the middle of the line who can maybe anchor it a little bit. But, yeah, the center had three snaps last year. Ty Buchanan, the tackle, 15 snaps. And then, yeah, you mentioned it with the two transfers of, you know, the Toledo guy, you know, graded at a 71. So it's not like he was so outstanding that, like, you're like, oh, that's definitely going to translate, right? And then, yeah, the Middle Tennessee. I don't love it, man. Overall, I don't know how I don't think I'd like this offense all that much, man. Brooks is really the only dude who's done it at a high level. You know, I think there's some depth out wide, but the offensive line turnover always a red flag to me when there's a ton of turnover up front. And yeah, I think it's all going to hinge on Morton and then whether or not Hudson is like a S-tier playmaker from the get-go, which could be, but I mean, it's not like that's just an easy thing to do. So,
yeah, I mean, last year this was 67th rank beta rank offense, which is, I would say, on the shade of like a bad power four offense. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know that it gets better. So
yeah,
that's sort of what you're working with. You know, last year they were definitely more anchored by the defense. So let's flip to the D now. You know, when you look, yeah, there we go. When you look at the sort of, you know, they PFF has some sort of categories. You can look at pass rush, coverage, you know, there's some tackling, run defense. When you look across all the categories, nothing really like stood out for this defense. I think they were just solid in most categories, but they weren't like top three in the conference in any one thing. So you want to start with the D line. What are your notes on the D line?
Yeah, I think just quickly overall, I think the thing that carried them last year, elite at preventing explosive plays. If you subscribe to the beta rank stuff, they were eighth in that nationally. So, you know, not outstanding at really anything, but they didn't let anything out the back door, which is very, very helpful because they're playing against college kids who inevitably fuck up every now and then. So, you know, make a team drive it on you and there's a good chance that something bad might happen. So, yeah, defensive line. Lose top four or lose four of their top six by snaps and their top four by pressures. So Miles Cole and Steve Linton, both gone from the edge. And then longtime stalwarts, Jalen Hutchings and Tony Bradford, two dudes who were sniffing all conference accolades for, I'd say, at least the last two seasons, gone from the middle. They are a true four-man front. You know, they're not one of these multiple teams. They run four down. So yeah, I think losing your top four guys from a four man front makes things tricky. You know, I think just looking at the starters, Isaac Smith, a redshirt junior, didn't play last year. I'm assuming he got hurt before the season because he was okay in 2022. So he'll be back. Interesting to see if he can pick up the slack. Cause you know, I think Cole and Linton, they weren't outstanding, but they were proven, you know, proven Big 12 starters, like starter quality football. The other edge, Joseph Adedire, 64 grade, but only 10 pressures on 500 plus snaps last year. So, you know, he was out there. He was out there. He wasn't always doing a ton. And then in the middle, Quincy Lede, Amarion Banks, they were solid as rotational pieces last year. But as I mentioned, you know, a pair of huge shoes to fill with Hutchings and Bradford. I don't know. The depth's okay. Most of them are kind of grading in that 60 to 65 range. But, you know, I think I feel like a broken record with some of the teams we've looked at now that we've been doing these like one after the other I just don't see a high ceiling. I don't know where the pressures are coming from with this group. I think that definitely puts a cap on, you know, what you're getting out of your defensive line. Like if they're playing serviceably, taking out blocks, great. But, you know, to really be like a good defensive line, you got to be able to beat your guy and get after the quarterback every now and then. So. Yeah, I don't know. Any additional notes there?
No, I mean, I feel like you kind of hit it. A lot of guys who grade out in the 60s, nobody who pops off the page. Isaac Smith didn't play last year. And I feel like this is a little bit of a theme, at least more than with other teams I've noticed, is I'm counting at least four starters who played like less than 15 snaps last year on this team, two on the offensive line. And then Isaac Smith didn't play last year, and then we got a guy here in the secondary we'll talk about who didn't play at all last year either. So that's just a little bit of a question mark for me. Move to the linebackers here. So your linebackers are Ben Roberts and Jacob Rodriguez. Both of these guys graded out fine last year. Roberts at a 69, and Rodriguez with a 75.9. So your two guys in the middle of the defense – maybe a potential strength, you're getting him back. Roberts was a freshman last year. So getting in there, almost hitting a 70 grade. He was the second highest snaps guy. As a freshman, that seems kind of notable to me. So maybe a bright spot here in the middle.
Yeah, no, I think you were right to highlight him. Yeah. 700 plus snaps as a true freshman and playing like pretty good football, I think is notable. I would expect him to be, you know, it's always nice when your middle linebacker is one of your best players, right? Just in terms of like organizing the defense, seems like they have that nailed on. Yeah, Jacob Rodriguez, 76 grade on 184. I think the notable thing about him is, you know, he wasn't like somebody who flashed necessarily as a run defender or a pass rusher or a coverage guy, but like was very solid in all three, right? Didn't seem like there's really a hole in his game. And then, you know, I think Bryce Ramirez, who looks like he'll probably be the first dude off the first dude out of the bullpen for them, was okay as a rotational piece. I think maybe the best thing you can say about this group is they got rid of Josiah Pierre, who we talked about on the last pod for UCF, because he was fucking awful last year. So, you know, maybe cleaning out some of that dead weight elevates the group. Not a ton of depth. So, you know, I think if any of those three guys miss significant time, they could be, you know, kind of just lost adrift in the ocean a little bit. But if all three of those guys stay healthy, yeah, I think you're right. This is a strength. Linebacker's a strength for them.
Yeah, looking solid. And yeah, Josiah Pierre, 45.7 grade last year.
A lot of snaps,
a 37 coverage grade. The PFF guys had something against him because some good numbers. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, other than Brooks, I feel like this is a unit, as we've gone down, then I'm like, okay, yeah, I could see it. This could be a fine unit. Okay, so moving to the secondary, I do think you have a very notable loss here. Adrian Taylor Demerson from last year, he almost hit 80 on PFF. I believe he was all Big 12. He definitely was like on the preseason list last year. I remember talking about him.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, he was a safety. He had a 91 pass rush grade, good in coverage. You know, he was your top snap guy, probably the overall best player on defense. He's gone, so that is a big hole to fill. I mentioned there was a player back here, AJ McCarty. He's projected as the star position. So choose your own name. He is the star. He didn't play a snap last year. Also, not sure if it was injury or what it was. He played a little bit at Baylor in the last two seasons prior. Nothing all that impressive PFF grade-wise. I don't know. What are you thinking about, like, the corners here? We got Horn and Braylon Lux. You have any good notes on them?
Yeah, Lux was good last year. 76 grade on 500 plus snaps. You know, I and then Horn had a 65.9 on 116. I think the issue, you lose two of your top three, right? You lose Malik Dunlap and Rashad Williams, who were both very good players, like, you know, quality Big 12 starters. So, you know, I guess we'll see. We'll see about Horn. The depth there, Jalen Peoples, you know, had a 71 grade, but as a reserve, very limited snaps. And then the other guy, Devin Cromwell, is a transfer. He's a Canadian guy. Transfer from Guelph, University of Guelph. So, you know, I guess we'll see. we'll see about that. So yeah, you know, I don't know, maybe a little bit shaky depth, but, you know, I think you can at least count on Lux to be a quality player there. At safety, you got to highlight CJ Baskerville. He was, I think, their second highest graded defender last year. Strong safety, only had one missed tackle last year as a box safety. So he'll be an excellent player for them. You know, I think a concern, downgrade, Chapman Lewis stepping in for Taylor Demerson at free safety. Wasn't awful last year. There is 63.4 on 140 snaps, but, you know, I think to expect him in his first year as a starter to you know, replace what they lost with DTD is a big ask. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I think overall secondary, I think there's some nice pieces sprinkled in, but I don't know about the group overall. I mean, they could be fine. Could be a bit meh, you know, just like if the holes are actually holes, you know, the holes we're seeing on paper. Could be a step back. Cause I think they had some good players last year. They had five quality starters last year, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you look really offense and defense, both sides of the ball, I don't know that you feel overwhelmingly like either side of the ball got better, which, you know, sitting in the middle of the conference here, the projected ninth, I kind of agree with what you were saying about maybe this is the cutoff team where you're like, yeah, them and probably nobody ranked lower than them coming into the season. I would just be very surprised to see them punching above their weight and beating multiple teams, you know, in the top tier of the conference. So yeah, let's get into the climb index. Starting with cohesion, I hit him with a 2.5, kind of just right in the middle. You know, I feel like stuff like the receiving room, there was just like this big committee last year. You have your coaches back. They're really like near the middle of the country in returning production. You know, you lose some guys you liked from last year, but yeah, I just put them right in the middle, 2.5.
So I gave him a 3. I think I gave him that extra half point for the coaching continuity, which I think matters. Obviously, I have to think it matters because that's the tunnel we're going down. So, no. But yeah, you bring back Brooks, Morton, some decent wide receivers, good linebackers, couple of nice defensive backs. So yeah, 3.
Okay, the losses. Who did you lose? I gave him a 3, and I think, you know, you lose Taylor Demerson on defense, I think is a pretty notable loss. You lose some guys on the D-line, and then you lose Tyler Shuck. So, you know, all contributors from last year and guys you probably would like to have back.
I dinged him hard, man. I gave him a 1.5. You know, I think you lose your top three receivers by target, almost the entire offensive line, the entire starting defensive line, and then four significant contributors from the secondary, you know, with the two corners and then Taylor Demerson and then Tyler Owens, I think was his name. I know it's Owens. I can't remember I didn't want to say Tyler, but yeah, you know, you lose a lot of quality starters. And, you know, like I said, I think that's why when we're looking at this team, you know, kind of what I said at the top, like it feels like there are some good pieces, but then there's a lot, it's like a split timeline team. Where you have a lot of guys getting their first snaps who, you know, hopefully they're ready. And that's not necessarily what you're looking for, right? Like Texas Tech isn't a team that reloads like that. Texas Tech's in our, you know, we always talk about the it comes in waves, right? And it just feels like they're like a riptide right now or something. You know, I don't, what's the right oceanic analogy for that?
You got your crest and your troughs are hitting at the same. You're canceling out.
Yeah, they're canceling out. Yeah, so yeah, I gave them a 1.5. I think they lost a lot.
Yeah. No, I feel like I probably should go lower too. Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about like pretty much the whole offensive line. Pretty notable. And important if you want to get the running game going this year. Yep. For infusions, I gave them a 2. I'm not overly excited about a ton of the pieces they're bringing in. And I also, like I said, I have this sort of caveat that you have several dudes on this starting lineup that didn't really play at all last year, and you couldn't find somebody who has the reps and has the, you know, the snaps behind them and it's proven. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like this feels like a watered down or similar team to last year. I feel like maybe you could have attacked the portal a little better.
Yeah, no, well said. I gave him a 2.5. I don't really like the offensive line additions. Gave him a 2.5 though, because I like the pieces they had at wide receiver. You know, I like the dude from Florida. I think Josh Kelly from Washington State is actually a really nice pull. And then Hudson, man, I'm a huge Micah Hudson fan. I mean, shit, anytime anybody manages to land a 5-star at any position, you know, I think that's a big deal. So I gave him some credit for that.
All right, the menu. Who do they got to play? Out of conference, I have Abilene Christian, the pride of the Pac-12, Washington State, and North Texas. That is your out of conference. In conference, you go Arizona State, Cincinnati, not a bad start. Arizona, Baylor, TCU, Iowa State, Colorado. You finish with Oklahoma State and WVU. I think in this conference, that's a pretty good schedule. Once again, I don't know. I think our schedule is really hard compared to all these other teams we look at. I give them a 4. I want this schedule.
I gave them a 4 out of 5, man. What a fucking joke. Yeah. Are you kidding me with this schedule? Like, look at this shit. Like, they miss Utah, Kansas State, and UCF. They play everybody in the bottom half except Houston and BYU. Like, there are 3, maybe 4 hard games on this schedule.
We just talk shit for 30 minutes, and I'm like, yeah, they're probably going to be undefeated in the conference play. They're going to beat Arizona State and Cincinnati, probably Colorado. They're already 5 wins, and that's, you know.
Dude, we were talking over-unders on the UCF pod. Like, they're over-under 7.5, and, like, you're looking at this team, and you're like, how does that not go under? And then you look at the fucking schedule, and you're like, oh, that's how. Right? Yeah. Like, I think they could be pretty shitty and still –
And you win the games I mentioned. Yeah, you win the games I mentioned, and you beat Baylor and TCU, and you're over. I mean, like, you're at least a 7. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. A nice menu for them, I think. I think that's a very favorable one. It's
unbelievable.
And then when we do our final deep dive on West Virginia, we can finally compare a schedule, because I feel like we've looked through everybody's schedule. I'm like, oh, man, that's easier than ours. That's easier than ours. That's easier than ours. Like,
our schedule. We've gone through 10 fucking teams. All of them are easier than ours.
Yeah.
All of them are easier than ours. It's a joke.
It's rough.
We got fucked.
All right. So let's talk the benefactor. Who would be their corporate sponsor? I said Qdoba, because it's a little bland. And let's be honest, it's a second tier tortilla company. So slap the Qdoba patch on the jerseys this year.
Yeah, I said Cabo Chips Tortillas. Basically, what happened there is I Googled shitty tortillas, and I found a website that ranked 20 popular tortilla brands from best to worst. Cabo Chips Tortillas was the worst. I'm going to give you a little blurb here. Cabo Chips Tortillas are commonly found at health food stores like Whole Foods. They make their products with 100% non-GMO coconut oil, so they're more nutrition-rich than traditional tortillas. All products are made with minimal ingredients to feel better about what you're putting into your body. Our most significant reason for ranking this brand at the bottom is, like many better-for-you type products, they do not last very long after purchasing. And sometimes healthier isn't always better, especially when it comes to how they taste. So, yeah, shitty tortillas.
Mm. Bummer, Texas Tech. When you win 7 games this year, we will not. We may or may not show respect. Depends how our game goes. But
I would be wildly unimpressed with 7 wins. 7 wins means that they have lost to one of TCU, Baylor, Cincinnati, or Colorado.
Mm.
Right? Like literally. If they lose to Arizona, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and us, there's not another. There's not like another good team that they have to beat.
Yeah, Yeah, it's... You never know, man. Baron Morton might take him to the promised land.
It's going to be like the Big 12 version of TCU going to the national championship. They're going to go like 10-2 and make the championship game and then get absolutely ransacked by like Utah or something. 65-7.
Oh, man. It could happen. I don't know. I just, like I said, I kind of feel like this team does not inspire a ton of confidence to me. The schedule is nice, but the team itself, I would be surprised if we find them in competition for the conference title.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. That's Texas Tech. This is the last of our opponents. This is a closeout game for West Virginia to clinch a spot in the conference championship game and the playoff. So this is who we're going to be dealing with. Make sure you check us out on smokingmusket.com or on Twitter at westbypod with underscores in between. Probably on there more, actually, now that the season is getting underway. And make sure you join the Smoking Musket Discord. A lot of fun to be in there, especially as the season is coming up. That's all we got. Make sure you check out the next episode. We're going to be doing the deep dive on the Mountaineers. We'll catch you there.
All righty. Take care, gang.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.